Continuing on with our series in Genesis, probably one of the best-known stories in the Bible is the story of Noah and his ark. We all heard about that story from the time we were small children in Sunday school. The animals, they entered two by two, then the flood, then the animals exited two by two, then a promise, covenant, and a sign of the rainbow that this would not happen again. This is the remembrance of most of us that comes to our mind. But there's much more to the story that needs to be understood, which leads to this first covenant. In chapter 6, where this story begins, really, in Genesis, we have a start of the flood account, and it starts with an attention grabber. So if we read verse 5, Chapter 6, 5. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. Wow. What do you think? I think God is grieved. His heart is troubled. We read this in verse 6. God saw a world that betrayed his intent. His intent was a harmonious, obedient relationship of creator and creature, us. In various ways, creation has exchanged the truth about God for a lie, worshiping the creature rather than the creator, Paul tells us in Romans 1:25. God's indictment here, his charge, is harsh. We're evil all the time. He goes on to say, I will wipe you out, in verse 7, chapter 6. He says, I will destroy, 6:13 and 6:17. However, God is not angered, but grieved. He's not enraged, but saddened. His heart is deeply troubled, as we read in verse 6. And then Noah finds grace in the eyes of the Lord. Because in a world of corruption and evil, Noah was blameless and he walked faithfully with God. Noah was in a God-centered relationship. Noah views God's commands as promises of life. He is the model of faith. The story here announces a minority view. For when God looked from on high, all he found was Noah. It does, show faithfulness is possible in a wicked world even. Then comes the command to build the ark later in the chapter. It is a detailed account of the dimensions of this life-saving vessel and its occupants. And here, within chapter 6, we are first introduced to the covenant. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Then as the story goes on, Noah is commanded to enter this ark. In chapter 7, he's commanded by God. At this point, the embarking takes place. Every pair of animals starts the boarding process, which probably took some time. If you've been on a cruise, you probably know what that's all about. As all the animals are entering, I am sure that one of Noah's sons leaned over to the other and said, "We're going to need a bigger boat." It is significant to notice, however, the author guides us, the readers. He guides our perception in this story by keeping a tight control on the point of view from which we see this story. At the beginning of the story, the reader follows the course of events from a divine perspective, from God's perspective. We, the readers, are allowed to look down from heaven over all the earth and see what the Lord himself sees. We are allowed to listen in on his conversations and follow his judgments all the way from chapter 6 into chapter 7. The narrative invites us to penetrate into the heart of God. We think as God, and we grieve for the fallen creation. What follows is the flood, and with the onset of the flood, however, we lose our unique perspective. We no longer see what God sees. We see only what the characters of the story themselves see. We see as the heavens open up and pour forth rain and the fountains of the deep break. Our perspective as readers is on a horizontal plane now. We see as Noah sees. The flood rises up around us. We cannot stand alongside God any longer and look down on those who are experiencing God's judgment. We now become a part of the experience of the story. As the flood progresses, God becomes distant, as if he's absent. Only the waters and those fleeing the waters are kept in the story's view. The author refuses to allow the reader to stand in a neutral corner and watch while God judges the earth. We are forced to take sides like those in the ark. Just like Lot's wife, we cannot look on others who are experiencing God's judgment. We are left either to enter the ark with Noah or to remain outside in the flood. Those are our choices. The only glimpse of God we see when the waters of the flood close in is in verse 7, or chapter 7, verse 16, his closing of the door behind those who have entered the ark. Then the story moves on into chapter 8. And after 150 days of flood water, we see God re-enter the story. God remembered Noah and sent a wind to dry up the waters. But we are not allowed to continue in God's perspective for very long here. Immediately, the story returns us to the ark, where we must wait with Noah for the waters to recede and rely on the return of the birds, the raven and the dove, sent out through the little window in the ark. We see that in 8 verses 5 to 14. Once dry land has appeared, in verse 14, the reader's perspective, us, we return to that of the Lord in heaven. And we hear and see his point of view again as at the beginning of the story. The command to exit the ark we see in verses 8, 15 to 19. This again has all the animals disembarking the ark now. Another length of time passes. And I'm sure the same son leaned over to the other and said, "I can't believe they all fit." We now come to worship and covenant. In chapters 8 and 9, we see worship and covenant. Noah's first act on exiting the ark was to build an altar to Yahweh, to God. It's the first one mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. And on it, he offered sacrifices to God. The scene describes an act of worship that combines both ritual and spontaneity. There is an altar. It is not in a special place, just some dry ground. There is a whole burnt offering of ceremonially clean animals, but no priest to mandate or to supervise its implementation. Instead, Noah's offering is presented as a natural and first response of thanksgiving to God that emerges out of his concrete experience of having been delivered from the consuming flood. God is pleased and appears to have a new resolve in his heart. For twice, God says, "Never again. Never again will I curse the ground. Never again will I destroy all living creatures." He then resets the seasons into their natural rhythm. Then in God trusts man with fresh decrees. The creational command, "Be fruitful and increase in number," in verses 9:1, and again in verses 9:7, the same command appears. This indicates God's intent for the post-flood world is to reestablish the process of the creational order. Along with this, he gives a couple other modifications, new restrictions in regards to eating and the shedding of blood. And now we come to my text. The covenant here, the first covenant introduced, was first mentioned in 6:18. Now in chapter 9, verses 8 to 17, comes clearly into focus. We'll read. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you, with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you. The birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on earth. This recreational process we read here, in which God essentially hits the reset button on creation. God extends his plan beyond the original creation with his fallen creatures here. Seven times God speaks of a unilateral covenant with Noah and every living creature. Seven times he says, I will remember my covenant. I will see and remember it. An everlasting covenant between me and you and all living creatures. Seven times that is said. It is an everlasting covenant that signals God's relentless commitment to relationship with creation. Never again, he says in verses 11 and 15, will God undo creation with a universal catastrophe because of our failings. The sign of this commitment is the rainbow, whose unfailing appearance assures us and reminds God that as long as the earth shall last, God's promise shall be in place. I think there's several features here about this covenant commitment that warrant close attention. First, it is conceived and established by God himself. God announces this covenant in the midst of a real world that is all too clearly on the edge of falling away from his intended plan of a harmonious, obedient relationship with him. He knows we will fall again, for he says that in verse 8:21 of Genesis. Never again, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. This is not the world of Eden, where all is very good. This is the world east of Eden, where human wickedness and violence have distorted God's designs and thwarted our harmonious, obedient relationship with him. This covenant shows God's grace in relation to man. There is a clear distinction between mercy and grace. Mercy partakes largely of the elements of pity and compassion for those who are in need. Grace is much more than this. It is God's attitude of unmerited, undeserved favor towards those who are positively despicable and undeserving. That would be us. It is his gift for the purpose of redemption that we may enter relationship with him. The covenant of grace is at the foundation of everything which God bestows upon us. God grants his grace to elicit faith, hope, and love in the context of divine relationship. Our faith is in response to his divine truth. When Noah heard God's message, he agrees that it is true, and he lives a life of total obedience. Our hope looks forward till the time we are in perfect union with him. Hope looks forward to God's promises. Our love is in response to his love. We love because he first loved us. The second thing we need to notice . The covenant is unconditional and unilateral. It imposes on mankind no obligations, no conditions. For the divine promise to be realized, we have nothing. It's our responsibility. All the initiative and all the responsibility rest on the side of one side of this partnership, which is God's. Throughout this story, God is the only one who speaks. No response is asked from or given by those who are the recipients. Noah says nothing. No commandment or requirement is appended on anything. There are no strings attached. There is nothing which could be understood as a condition upon which the grace of God was bestowed. Grace is freely given. In fact, there is no obligation that follows for Noah and his seed which could be regarded as the means through which grace promised is to be done. In no way can it be earned by our effort or confirmed by any action on our part. Therefore, the thought of breaking the covenant is irrelevant. We cannot break the covenant because there is no human agency by which the promises are fulfilled. The sign of the rainbow does not take the form of an ordinance to be performed by us at God's command, such as the covenant with Abraham and circumcision. The rainbow in the clouds is for the purpose of attesting to the faithfulness of God and to bring to God's remembrance, not ours. It is not a sign over which we have any control. The rainbow is a natural occurrence. The natural earthly feature was used to express and symbolize spiritual truths. God definitely associated nature with grace. The natural here is a symbol of the supernatural. All can see the rainbow, and the covenant of God in like manner was intended to be seen by all without difficulty or hindrance. The rainbow in the heavens speaks to the universal scope of the covenant. It is unique. The rainbow is described as the joint product of storm and sun. The covenant of God with us may be described as, on the one hand, it is due to the cloud of human sin, and on the other hand, to the sunshine of divine grace. The rainbow is beautiful. There is scarcely anything more exquisitely beautiful than the rainbow. And assuredly, there is nothing in the universe more beautiful than the grace of God. It bridges heaven and earth. As the rainbow spans the sky and reaches the earth, so it is with the covenant of grace which comes from God on high to us here below. The rainbow is always present after a storm. It may not be visible to us because the clouds hide it. But if we were above the clouds in the right spot, we would see it. God is always above the clouds, and he's always in the right spot, and he always sees it. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember, says God. It is not our sight of the rainbow, but God that constitutes the covenant. Third, this covenant extends God's promise to all creation after the flood. It is universal in scope. Thus, we are all in the same boat. It embraces not only Noah, but his seed after him and every living creature. Envisioned here is a cosmic promise that is everlasting to God's creational intentions for every living creature. The scope demonstrates that grace bestowed is not dependent upon our intelligent understanding or a favorable response on our part. We see that God's creative power was not a coercive or authoritarian. Rather, it was invitational and open. While God wills all creation to come to relationship with Him, He does not force or commandeer it. So in this story, bringing the world to trust and obedience is not done by God's decree. It is done by bestowing His grace to all, without exception. The world is brought to relationship with God by the universality of His divine grace, mercy, and love. The story is not about the world being assaulted by a devastating flood and a God who stands remote and watches. It is about our God who endures because of and for the sake of us, His wayward creation. A God who loves us and desires a relationship with us. Noah knew this love and relationship, and God, through His covenant, makes it possible for all to have this relationship. We know the covenant is everlasting, unconditional, unilateral, and universal, with God as author and implementer. God's unconditional promise is certain and unchangeable. The covenant is a divine bestowing of grace and patient endurance, which is proclaimed, confirmed, and fulfilled by God. We can take our comfort that we are the beneficiaries of this gift that God freely bestows. And He wants to bring us to a harmonious, obedient relationship with Him. Shall we pray? I invite the worship team back.